with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Sound the alarms. Draft week is finally upon us. And we're here to break it all down on yet another episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast. I'm Chris McPherson, joined alongside by the man who does it better than I think pretty much anyone in the draft analyst business, Mr. Fran Duffy.
Thank you, Chris. It's Christmas. Christmas in April.
I was going to say, how do you describe this week of the year? Is it bittersweet that you're finally seeing all these prospects who you've been watching for over a year now take their place in the NFL? Or is it like a proud papa moment, so to speak, to be like, I can't wait to see where this guy lands?
It's more the latter, because it's not bittersweet, because for me the journey to the draft never ends, because the week after I'm sure I'll be watching players for the following. Well, I tried to give myself a little bit of credit, watching players for the fall. So, I think when you look at this process as a whole, it is a lot of fun getting to this point and trying to make sense of all the silly rumors out there. And that's why we're bringing on our guest today, Tony Pauline, to kind of sort through the madness a little bit, because there's so much flying around. It's a lot of fun these last few days. It's silly, but it's a lot of fun.
I feel like, and I believe I've said this before on the podcast, that this is the most unpredictable draft.
Yeah.
I feel like that just from the very top, is in terms of what the Browns are going to do at number one to the Giants. Will they pass on the quarterback at number two? It just seems like just that top five seems so unsettled. And maybe unlike past years where there weren't big name players up there as high, it's quarterbacks. I mean, it's the biggest position. It's the one that's the most talked about leading up to the draft. And it could be a historic draft in terms of the quarterback position. And they're all going to go up high. You just don't know to which team at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is that there's just so much intrigue about it. I mean, we're 3 days out. We have no idea who's going number one. We don't know what number two is going to do after number one.
Exactly.
And then you don't know what's going. We have a better idea of who's going to go number three than we do anything else in the top 10. Like, we have no, we, unless somebody trades ahead of three
that's
to get
the whole
them.
Thing. Like, that's exactly.
Like, to me, I just have like this feeling that Denver's going to trade ahead of the New York Jets and they're going to take Baker Mayfield number two.
Are you throwing a spoiler for your pick six already?
No, I didn't. It's not a spoiler for pick six. Wait, actually, it might
it
be.
It is.
Well, there you go. There's one to the pick six. But, like, that's what I mean. Like, there's just so much stuff.
You're giving them the goods too early in the show,
Fran. There's too much stuff flying around to even keep track of at this point.
So, it's a jam-packed show. So, the way we've done the last couple of years in the final week leading up to the draft, we'll have Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com, who is one of the, I would say, the best insider when it comes to draft information. It is going to be a rapid-fire session. We're not going to even have draft buzz this week. He is draft buzz. We're going to hit him with how many questions did we compile? About 50?
I mean, yeah, it's going to end up being more because we're going to follow up on stuff. So
certainly.
it's going to be a lot.
50 questions going position by position. What's he hearing across the board as Thursday night quickly approaches? So that's draft buzz. That's Mr. Relevant. Our pick six, surprise, surprise, bold predictions for what's going to happen. And we've offered a tease already in terms of what one is going to be from Fran. So I have three, Fran has two more to provide. Some of them, I think, have a good chance of being correct.
Some, I think so.
I'm sure we'll definitely be
looking
wrong.
At yours now. Yeah, I think so.
And then last but not least, your questions in our draft mailbag. And then on Wednesday, we are starting to work on the reporter mock draft. So we are calling the best reporters who cover each team to find out who they think the teams will select. Not who they would select, but who they think the teams will select in each spot. And we can't do trades, so obviously, there's going to be some wrench thrown into it. In fact, early this morning, it's Monday morning as we record this, it was an old tweet from the Sammy Watkins draft from when the Browns and the Bills made that trade, and that tweet from one of the Buffalo news stations was resurfacing on Twitter, being retweeted around as if it were current. It was like, the Browns and the Bills have made a trade for the number four pick. You're like,
I almost got. I almost did it. I clicked. The only thing that saved me was that I clicked on their profile.
Yes.
Just to sit, just
and
to check.
Went through the recent tweets.
And I was like, it's not there. Did they delete it already? And then I realized it's from 2014.
That's, yeah. So at first I did as well. I said, oh, because I'm, you know, you're trying to, you know, figure out who you're reaching out to for these mock, to do the reporter mock draft. And you're like, now you got to ask this guy to do this pick or, you know, Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com, who's doing the Browns pick. It's like, you only have to do one pick for us. Yeah. All those plans kind of get thrown up in the air a little bit there. So, but without further ado, let's bring on the draft insider himself, Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com, to give it the latest juice going into Thursday night.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
An annual rite of passage here on the Journey to the Draft podcast is Mr. Relevant being Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com. In the final week of the draft, giving us all the latest news and nuggets. It's Tony, are you ready? Because we're going rapid fire here. We've got a lot of questions. We're going position by position. We want to cover everything with you here, okay?
I don't know if I'll ever be ready for you guys, but lay it on me anyway.
All right, again, you can follow him on Twitter, at Tony Pauline. How many drafts has this been for you, by the way, Tony, before we get into it?
1987. So 1986 was the year I started to get interested in it. 1987 was the year I was completely hooked.
Well, that's why he's the best draft insider in the business. So Tony, to kick things off, and Brandon and I at the top of the show, we're talking about how this seems to be the most unpredictable draft that we've ever been a part of. Who is going first overall to the Cleveland Browns?
In my latest mock draft, I haven't taken Sam Darnold. I was told on Friday by people that I trust. They think there's a lot of conversation in the Cleveland Browns war room. Haslam has been getting information on Allen. All signs point to Sam Darnold being the first pick of the draft, which is who I have on my mock draft that went up today.
Tony, how did you take that news? Because I know you've been pretty steadfast on them with the Josh Allen bandwagon there in Cleveland. What are your thoughts there?
You know, as has everyone else. But, you know, I was told that all along that, you know, Dorsey was leaning towards Josh Allen, but it wasn't a definite. And you know what? It still may not be a definite. But the word is that I'm getting is that a lot of NFL people have been saying to the Browns and even to Haslam, Josh Allen's just not worth the first pick of the draft. And I knew that Sam Darnold was in the conversation there, and I think they look at Sam Darnold as a bit of a safer pick, believe it or not, which I don't necessarily agree with, but that's the way they're looking at it.
All right, Tony, you've had the report that it's a done deal, basically, between Baker Mayfield going to the Jets and number three. Is that still the case?
Well, I was kind of misquoted there. If you read the passage, what I said was that people – who are handling the quarterbacks at the top, more and more are getting the feeling that the Jets are going to select Baker Mayfield, although there is still a chance of Josh Rosen. And then what I said was one person I know very well who's handled the top quarterbacks for the past 5 years believes that Baker Mayfield to the Jets is a done deal. It then kind of morphed into Tony Pauline says Baker Mayfield to the Jets is a done deal. I mean, that is the opinion of some people. I think it's very likely he heads off to New York. I think it would also be a mistake if the Jets selected Baker Mayfield ahead of Josh Rosen.
Tony, with all of the uncertainty around these quarterbacks, we know about Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, you've got Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield. Do any of these guys fall out of the top 10? I know there's been a little bit of a buzz and some whispers about Josh Rosen falling a little bit further. Do you feel like any of these guys fall out of the top 10?
You know, I think it's going to be very tough for any of them to fall out of top 10, but from what I'm hearing, and it's reflective in my mock draft, Josh Rosen does fall out of the top 10. He lands to the Miami Dolphins with their selection, the 11th selection. The Miami Dolphins do like Josh Rosen. They don't even have to trade up to get him.
So with that in mind, Tony, who are the teams that we should be keeping an eye on Thursday night that would be seriously moving up for a quarterback?
Buffalo Bills are desperate to move up for a quarterback. They made that first move with the Cincinnati Bengals to get into a more attractive position at number 12. There's talk of them, of a fundamental agreement being there between them and the New York Giants, so they could move up to the number two position to grab a quarterback. I don't know that that's going to happen. I think the Giants are going to entertain offers. We'll actually look at taking Saquon Barkley, who's the number one rated player in this draft. So the Buffalo Bills desperately want to move up to get a quarterback. The Miami Dolphins would like to move up and get a quarterback. The Arizona Cardinals would also like to move up to get a QB. So those two, three teams with the Bills leading the charge.
Tony, there's been a lot of buzz with Lamar Jackson out of Louisville and where he's going to end up in this draft. What range do you think Lamar Jackson goes? So you don't necessarily need to pick a specific team, but in what range in this draft do you feel like he hears his name called?
Maybe anywhere from 15 to 18, if not the Arizona Cardinals, maybe a team that trades up with the Seattle Seahawks who want to move down out of the first round to get Lamar Jackson. So I think he's going to be somewhere in the middle of round one.
Tony, last question regarding the quarterbacks for now. Does Mason Rudolph get into the first round?
You know, I would be shocked. It's in my opinion, he's not worth a first-round selection. Again, I hate to refer back to my mock draft, but I put in the notes section, he could be the surprise pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars late in round one. Don't think the New England Patriots, you can take him around one. On my board, no, but it is a possibility.
All right, Tony, let's change now to the running back position. And Saquon Barkley, obviously the big name. With all the uncertainty around the quarterbacks, and you know, it seems like Bradley Chubb could go number four to Cleveland. Is there any way that Saquon Barkley slides out of the top five?
No, because I think the only reason that Bradley Chubb is going four to Cleveland is because people are projecting the New York Giants taking Saquon Barkley at two. If Saquon Barkley is there at four, I think the Browns swipe him up immediately. He's the best player in this draft, far and away the best player in the draft. You know, you build great competitive teams by bringing in potentially great players. Chubb is a very good player, but I think Saquon Barkley is potentially a great player in this draft.
Tony, who is the second running back off the board after Saquon?
It's going to be Darius Geis. Just as long as teams are okay with his off-the-field issues, he's going to go somewhere late round one, won't make it out of the first couple of selections of round two. Very talented player, but you have to be comfortable with his off-the-field issues.
Tony, the other tandem of running backs that gets a lot of buzz is the Georgia duo of Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Starting to hear some buzz about Sony Michel in the first round, but I'll ask the question anyway. Who gets drafted first, Nick Chubb or Sony Michel?
Well, it's going to be Michel. I don't think that the spread is as huge as people think. If Michel gets drafted in round one, it means that he's likely hopped over Darius Geis, and teams are not comfortable with the off-the-field issues on Darius Geis. I would be shocked if we come out of either Thursday night or Friday night and Sonny Michel is not selected before Nick Chubb.
Tony, the Eagles in numerous mock drafts have been linked to a running back in the first round. If they don't go in that direction and wait till day three, which is right now where their next pick would be, who are some running backs who could be in play there for Philadelphia?
If he happens to fall, I think Kalon Ballage would be a terrific pick for them, especially with the coaching staff there and the way they're able to extract the best out of players. I mean, Ballage is a guy who he's got tremendous physical skill, 6'1", 228 pounds, runs a 4.46, has shown the ability to really to take over ball games, but just hasn't done it on a consistent basis. Looks like Tarzan plays like Jane, and I think he needs good coaching. He needs a boot in the rear end. I think Philadelphia has all the ingredients to extract the best out of this guy, which is potentially to be a featured runner at the next level. So I think that's a consideration. I think John Kelly of Tennessee would also be a consideration, a nice-sized interior ball carrier who's an outstanding pass catcher out of the backfield. He would be a consideration in round four. You know, if they're looking for more of a situational type guy, you know, to complement their interior runners, Philip Lindsay of Colorado in round six, a speedier guy who's an outstanding pass catcher out of the backfield, a guy who can turn the perimeter, which a lot of their backs can't. I think that would be consideration late in the draft.
Tony, my last question for you at the running back position, Rashad Penny, what are you hearing with him? Because I feel like we're starting to hear a little bit of whispers with him as well as maybe being like a surprise late first round pick. Are you hearing similar things? Where do you think Penny goes off the board?
Well, you know, you're going to hear all those whispers about guys moving up or down draft boards this week. You're only going to have so many running backs going round one. I think right now he's a middle of round two type of guy. He's a solid ball carrier. He ran much better than expected at the combine. He has a great amount of upside. I just do not see him as a first round back.
All right, Tony, transitioning to the wide receivers, who is the first one off the board and how high What range will this player go in?
I believe it's going to be Ridley out of Alabama, who, hands down, my boy Calvin Ridley is the number one receiver. I think he's going to go to the Baltimore Ravens in the middle of round one. Ravens need a receiver, and Ozzie Newsome loves his Alabama players.
Tony, how many receivers end up in this first round? We saw that big run last year with three going the top 10. Obviously, none of these guys are really getting talked about as in terms of the caliber of prospect of last year's group, but how many, when it's all said and done, do you think go in the first round?
I think two. I've got Calvin Ridley as my only surefire first rounder, and then I got Cortland Sutton and DJ Moore as first or second rounders. I think really the only other receiver who's going to go in round one is DJ Moore. He's likely to end up with the Dallas Cowboys.
Tony, one receiver who's gotten a lot of buzz is DJ Chark, you know, the tall, speedy wideout from LSU. Where do you think he goes in this draft?
I think he's going to go early to mid part of round two. I have him right now, the number 45 to the Green Bay Packers, a guy who's a terrific athlete, worked out much better than anybody expected at the combine, has shown improvement in his game, and as we know with LSU receivers, they become much better in the NFL than they were on the college level.
Tony, we've played this game with you in the past. We'll bring it back for this. Give us the order that all three of these players are drafted at the wide receiver position. You've got James Washington out of Oklahoma State, Anthony Miller from Memphis, and Deshaun Hamilton in Penn State. What order do you see those three guys coming off the board?
Washington will be first. Anthony Miller should be second, then Deshaun Hamilton. The only reason that Anthony Miller may not be second are injury red flags. He had a shoulder issue. He had a foot issue. He did not run well during his pro day. He doesn't have great size. I still think he's going to be he will be drafted before Deshaun Hamilton.
All right, Tony, last question for the wide receivers. Dante Pettis has not worked out for teams in this pre-draft process, the dynamic threat out of Washington. Do you have a sense of where he's going to go in the draft?
Probably going to go late to round two to a team that, you know, is looking for a receiver return specialist. And people talk about his abilities as a pass catcher. He is also a game-changing return specialist, so he's a dual-threat guy. If he's not off the board late in round two, he'll be off the board probably the first couple of picks in round three.
That's interesting to hear him that high. That'll be really interesting. I really like Dante Pettis. I think he's really underrated at this point in the process. Tony, let's transition to the tight end class. Obviously, not a lot of consensus opinion on this group overall. Mike Gesicki getting all the buzz coming out of the combine, but there's a lot of different opinions on who the best player is. When it's all said and done, who do you feel will be the first one off the board, and how high does that player go?
Yeah, I have Dallas Goedert as the first tight end off my board. There are some people who believe Hayden Hurst of South Carolina will be the first tight end selected. I think it's probably going to be either to New Orleans in round one or the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't think they'll go back-to-back tight end. But you're talking, you know, literally as the first round closes out, the first tight end will come off the board. I think it's going to be Goedert, but wouldn't be a surprise if it's Hayden Hurst.
Tony, you've written previously about Ian Thomas out of Indiana. How high does he go in this draft class?
And that's a player I know the Philadelphia Eagles would love to have. I think he's going to go somewhere in round two. Whoever doesn't take the tight end in round one between the New Orleans Saints and Jacksonville Jaguars, I think is going to snag that player in round two. So you're looking at Thomas coming off the board as round two is closing out.
Tony, a lot of fans in this region are really excited about Mike Gesicki. I mentioned his upside earlier coming out of the combine. How high does he go in this draft? Because I know after the combine, everybody's saying, oh, he's not even going to be there at 32, which is, you know, it's a little bit silly to say that's definitely going to be the case. But how high do you think he can go?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me with Gesicki, people are manufacturing holes in his game. They say, well, you know, he's big and he's stiff, but all the guy did was adjust to a rather inaccurate quarterback on the college level and make passes. And even in his pro day, people were impressed the way he was able to bend and get down and scoop up the low throws. I don't think he's going to go in round one, although I think he's worthy of going, being a first-round pick. I think he's going to go somewhere in the middle of second round, maybe the Baltimore Ravens, depending on what they do in round one, who still need a tight end. They can come around and grab him.
Tony, our last question for the tight ends. Which day three prospect is getting the most positive buzz at this point?
At the tight end position, two guys. Dalton Schultz out of Stanford. 6'5½", 244 pounds. He's not great, but he's well-rounded in all areas of the position. Another guy that people really like is Andrew Vollert of Weber State, who's at the Shrine Game. He's 6'5½", 239 pounds, runs in place to a 4.62. Terrific pass catcher with the frame to add weight and become a good blocker at the next level. You're looking at him somewhere in the sixth round area and a guy who's a 1 to 2 year project.
Tony, a lot of people, including myself, as we transition out of the offensive line, believe that Quentin Nelson may be the best overall player, if it's not Saquon Barkley, in this draft. What do you feel like is the over-under on where he gets selected? Let's say we place it at 5.5, selection 5.5. Do you think he goes higher or lower than that? So basically, is Quentin Nelson going to be a top five pick in this draft?
I have him going fifth to the Denver Broncos. There's talk Denver may trade down, but I think if Nelson's there, he's too good to pass up.
Tony, who is the next offensive lineman, whether it's guard or tackle or center, who's coming off the board after Nelson?
Mike McGlinchey, and it's not going to be too long. His teammate, Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame, the tackle. Really the only top-rated tackle, the only NFL-ready tackle in this year's draft. All the other guys are going to need time. One of the few left tackles in this year's class, although there's some question as to whether or not he's going to be a left tackle. He could go as high as the Oakland Raiders.
Tony, with all this depth, it seems like there's a lot of depth on the interior offensive line, guys that can play guard and center. And with all that depth, obviously one of two things are going to happen. Either there's going to be a run on those players, like what we saw with those receivers last year in the top 10, or the guys are going to fall because teams are going to feel like, oh, we can wait a little bit. What do you feel like is most likely to happen? Do you think that there will be a run on these guys in the first round, or do you think some of them will fall a little bit further than we may have imagined?
I think what will happen is there'll be a run on them starting late in round one, and it will continue through the early part of round two. Maybe right around where Tennessee is drafting or Cincinnati is selecting at pick number 21. You could see Isaiah Wynn come off the board. Soon after that, Will Hernandez will come off the board. And then the top of round two, you're going to have guys such as Austin Corbett, eventually Billy Price, I should also say James Daniels in round one. So I think once you get to about the 21st pick of round one through the 42nd pick of the draft, the early part of round two, that's when all the interior offensive linemen will come off the board.
Tony, early in the pre-draft process, Orlando Brown was mocked in the first round in most analysts' mock drafts. He had that, let's just say a historically bad workout at the combine. What's his stock at this point? Where do you envision him going in the draft?
He was mocked in the first round, and he was mocked after his combine performance for different reasons, right? I think he's probably going to fit into the late part of round three. He's going to squeeze into the second day of the draft. I think when you get late in round three, those teams start getting their compensatory picks. They're going to say the guy's just too big and too powerful to pass up, and we'll work on his fundamentals. You know, we'll make him a little bit stronger. We'll get him to play as a better athlete.
Tony, another guy whose status and whose stock I think was hurt a little bit at the combine just for a different reason was Billy Price from Ohio State. Guy can play guard, he can play center, obviously hurt himself on the bench press out in Indianapolis. Where do you hear that he's going at this point? I think he was kind of viewed as a late first-round selection before the injury. Do you think he's still in that range?
Unlikely. I've got him in the middle of round two to the Washington Redskins. From what I'm told, that the injury was a little bit worse than advertised. Could take a little bit longer for him to return. But my opinion is Billy Price is a major value and a major steal out of after pick 25 because the pectoral injury is going to eventually heal. He is a tremendous offensive lineman. He's a tremendous center. It's going to be good value.
Tony, is there a surprise first-round pick to come from the offensive line, whether it's Colton Miller, the tackle from UCLA, Tal Crosby from Oregon, or maybe Frank Ragnow from Arkansas?
I don't think it's the last two. I do think Colton Miller could squeeze into the late part of round one, especially to a tackle needy team like the New England Patriots. As I stated all along, Miller is second round value, but because of the need of the position, the way teams place priority on him, and just basically the lack of quality at the position, he will probably be vaulted into the late part of round two.
Tony, there's a lot of small school offensive linemen that are in this class, and outside of that the Power Five conferences, whether you're looking at Austin Corbett from Nevada and Chukwuma Okorafor from Western Michigan, obviously there's Alex Kappa from Humboldt, and there's a bunch of these guys, Brandon Parker, North Carolina A&T. Who do you feel gets drafted the highest of these small school guys?
It's definitely going to be Austin Corbett if you consider him one of the small school, you know, major guys. Austin Corbett's going to come off the board early in round. You could also say the same thing for Will Hernandez, who goes to UTEP, Conference USA, basically the same as Mountain West. So, but based on your criteria, I'd say it's definitely Austin Corbett. He's going to come off the board within the first 10 to 12 picks of round two. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, played tackle at the Nevada. Projects to guard, can also play center, literally can play four positions on the offensive line. Not a mauler, but a smart, intelligent lineman who I think has got a great upside. He's going to have a long career at the next level.
All right, Tony, time to go to the defensive side of the ball, and we're going to start with Bradley Chubb. True or false, and I think we might know the answer to this already based on some of your comments. True or false, Bradley Chubb will be a Cleveland Brown.
If Saquon Barkley is selected by the New York Giants with the second pick of the draft, which I think is going to happen, then Bradley Chubb will eventually be selected by the Browns with that fourth selection, yes.
All right, staying with true or false, Harold Landry will go in the top 10. True or false?
False. I mean, he's a mid to late first round type of talent. It would be a major reach for him to go early in the top 10.
Marcus Davenport. What's his status and where is he going? Seemed like after the Senior Bowl, there were mocks that had him in the top 10, top 15. Seems like he's more of a late first round. Where do you think he eventually goes?
I think he ends up with the Detroit Lions with the 20th pick. You know, they need somebody on the other side of Ziggy Ansah for their franchise. He's got great upside. You know, I happen to think he's going to be he's better off as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but he's got the frame to grow into the defensive end. I think he ends up in the bottom half of round one.
One of the wild cards of this draft, Tony, is Arden Key from LSU. What do you feel, or what are you hearing is the status on him at this point? Where do you hear that he's going to go in this draft?
He's going to go mid to middle portion of round three. I mean, very talented player on the field, can be an impact defensive player when he applies himself. There are concerns about his size, concerns about his conditioning, concerns about his intensity, and a lot of off-the-field condition, a lot of off-the-field concerns. I go back to what I wrote last August in my preview of LSU. The more I heard about Arden Key, the more I was thinking about Randy Gregory. So it's a dangerous situation. Nothing illegal, but just a situation that the team that drafts him is going to have to get a grip on.
All right, Tony, another set the order in terms of how these three players will be selected. Arden Key, the first player, Josh Sweat out of Florida State, and Lorenzo Carter out of Georgia.
I think it's going to be the exact opposite way of what you presented. I think Carter of Georgia will be first, then Josh Sweat, then Arden Key.
Let's go to inside a defensive tackle, Tony. Who's the first defensive tackle off the board? How high does he go?
It's going to be Vita Vea. He does not get past the Washington Redskins. I don't think he's going to go any earlier than that. Maybe the Miami Dolphins take him. With the 11th pick as a replacement for Ndamukong Suh, but if the board falls the way I think it's going to fall, they're going to take a quarterback and be the first DT off the board to the Washington Redskins.
Tony, will Mo Hurst out of Michigan slide because of the medical condition that was found at the combine?
He may, but he's not going to slide that far. He's going to go. If he goes in the late first round, it's going to be in the bottom eight picks. I have him going to the Minnesota Vikings with the 30th selection. If he falls out of the first round, I do not see him getting past the Cleveland Browns, who own two early picks on the 33rd and the 35th pick. I don't see him getting past them at either one of those selections.
All right, Tony, over-under. I know how much you love over-under. How many defensive tackles go in the first round? We're going to set the over-under at 4.5. The names, just to give you some assistance here, Daron Payne, Maurice Hurst, Vita Vea, Taven Bryan, Harrison Phillips is probably the next one that I guess some people feel like could be there on the back end of it. Do you say Harrison Phillips goes in the first round, Maurice Hurst, all the rest of those guys going round one?
I think it's going to be under. I don't think Harrison Phillips has any chance of being a first-round player. And then even there, the question is, does Maurice Hurst fall out of the first round? So I think you're going to see 3 to 4 defensive tackles going round one. I'm going to take the under.
Here's a under-the-radar name for you, Tony. Breland Speaks. Why is he not getting more love? Fran, recently on the podcast, made a comparison to Eagles defensive end/tackle Michael Bennett.
Yeah, I like Speaks. I have consistently rated him as a second-day player. I don't know that he's going to go on the second day. I think it's more an issue of size. He's 6'3", he's 283 pounds. Is he a true tackle? Is he a two-gap end? What position does he play at the next level? He's not a real strong guy. He does come with a good degree of upside. He is a playmaker. I'm a big fan myself. Like I said, I got him rated as a third rounder. But I think it's more an issue of size, strength, and where do you fit him at the next level.
All right, Tony, we'll go to linebacker. Who's the first one off the board? How high does he go? I guess this is really just a battle between Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah, right now I have Roquan Smith being selected by the Indianapolis Colts with the sixth pick of the draft. That is basically assuming that Barkley goes 2 to the Giants, Chubb goes 4 to the Browns, and then the Colts, who really love Roquan Smith, swipe him off the board at 6.
All right, so what's the floor in terms of draft spot for Leighton Vander Esch?
I think he does not get past the Dallas Cowboys. There's been some talk about his medicals. I don't think it's not a huge issue. It's just something that teams are going to review. I know the Cowboys had asked about his medicals, but when all is said and done, I'd be surprised if he gets past the Cowboys. If he does, he's not getting past the Steelers.
All right, so playing off of that, what is the ceiling for Rashawn Evans? How high could the star Alabama linebacker get taken in this draft?
Yeah, a guy who did not run for scouts before the draft, which really turned a lot of teams off. I think the earliest he goes is number 25 to the Tennessee Titans. Titans have needs at the linebacker position. Evans is a three-down player who I think could fill a variety of their needs at that spot.
Tony, where do you think Tremaine Edmonds goes in this draft? Very young, not even 20 years old yet. Certainly the ceiling is very high for him. Still some rough edges to his game. Where do you see the Virginia Tech linebacker going?
Tremendous athlete, great size. Really a guy who's very good now, who could be great down the road. I have him going number 8 to the Chicago Bears.
Tony, what order do you see these three players getting drafted to the linebacker spot? We're going to throw three names. Josie Jewell from Iowa, Darius Leonard, a personal favorite from South Carolina State, and Uchenna Nwosu from USC. Some people view him as an edge player, some people as an off-ball linebacker. What order do you see those three guys coming off the board?
The exact opposite way in which you presented them. I think they're all going to be third-round guys. I think Nwosu goes first, Darius Leonard second, Josie Jewell third.
All right, time for some cornerbacks here, Tony. What is the over-under for Denzel Ward's draft slot if we're setting it at 8.5?
I think it's going to be under. I think I've got him. I got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking him at 7. If he doesn't go to Tampa Bay, I could see Chicago jumping all over him at number 8.
Who's the second corner taken after Denzel Ward, Tony, and how high does that player go?
I have Minka Fitzpatrick. People say Fitzpatrick's a safety. I think he can play corner. So I have him on my corner board. I think it's going to be Minka Fitzpatrick, who's going to go somewhere in the middle of round 1, maybe 14 to the Packers, maybe 15 to the Arizona Cardinals. If you want to say, Tony, you're crazy, Fitzpatrick's not a corner, he's a safety, then it's going to be between Josh Jackson of Iowa and Jair Alexander, who will probably find themselves somewhere in the range of where Carolina drafts towards the end of round 1.
Okay, you've mentioned some of these players, but we have another order of these players being drafted. You mentioned Jair Alexander, Carlton Davis out of Auburn, Josh Jackson, and Mike Hughes. So four guys for you here: Jair Alexander, Carlton Davis, Josh Jackson, and Mike Hughes.
I'll be true to my board. I'm going to say it's Josh Jackson, Jair Alexander, Mike Hughes, and then Carlton Davis.
Tony, another corner question for you. Over, under, how many corners go off the board in round 1? We won't include Minka in this discussion. I know you see him as a corner. I see him as a corner. Dane Brugler from NFL Draft Scout sees him as a corner. A lot of people see him as a corner. For this question, we're going to keep him out of the discussion. How many corners go in the first round? Let's set it at 6.5.
If Fitzpatrick's not on your corner board, I think it's under. I think it's well under. I think it's 4. Denzel Ward, Josh Jackson, Jair Alexander, maybe Mike Hughes. I don't think Carlton Davis. I don't think Isaiah Oliver, Dante Jackson, Quentin Meeks. I don't think any of those guys are first-round picks. So, I mean, even with Minka Fitzpatrick in there, I think it's still under.
All right, Tony, sort of an Eagles-related question here, because the Eagles need to address the nickel corner position at some point here. I'm going to list these nickel corners and give us the order that they'll be drafted in. So these are some you know, day two and three guys here. DJ Reed, Duke Dawson, MJ Stewart, Teron Johnson, and Perry Nickerson. I'm going to go through it again. So DJ Reed, Duke Dawson, MJ Stewart, Teron Johnson, and Perry Nickerson.
I'm going to say Duke Dawson is the first one selected of that bunch. The next, most people say MJ Stewart. I'm going to go with Perry Nickerson. I'm a huge Perry Nickerson fan. I have been for 3 years. Then MJ Stewart, then Teron Johnson of Weber State. Finally, DJ Reed of Kansas State, just a little bit too small for my liking.
Another kind of Eagles-related-ish question, Tony. A guy that, to me, compares pretty favorably to Rasul Douglas, the Eagles' third-round pick a year ago, is Tarvarius McFadden from Florida State. Big kid, has the ability to play the ball in the air, questionable long speed. What's the status on him? Because I remember coming into the year, a lot of people thought he could be a first-round pick. Obviously, that's not going to be the case now. Where do you feel like he's going to hear his name called in this draft?
End of round three. It's not even questionable long speed. It's problematic long speed. I mean, either on stopwatch in the 40 or on film. Just can't stay downfield with guys. So you're going to have to put him in specific systems. Still, I think when you look at the size, when you look at the ball skills, because he does have excellent ball skills, you're looking at a late third-round prospect.
Let's go to the safeties. Now, obviously, you think Minka Fitzpatrick is a cornerback. Is there any chance that Derwin James goes ahead of Minka Fitzpatrick in this draft?
I think there definitely is a chance, but if he does, it's only going to be by a position or two.
Who goes first, Tony? Ronnie Harrison or Justin Reed?
I'm a Ronnie Harrison guy. I mean, Justin Reed looks the part. He's got great measurables, but his film, I'm just not impressed by his film at all. He doesn't have great ball skills. I would take Ronnie Harrison ahead of Justin Reed. Wouldn't surprise me if it's the other way around.
Another under-the-radar safety here, Jesse Bates from Wake Forest. Where does he go in this draft?
I can't see him going round one. People are saying potentially the Pittsburgh Steelers who need a safety. I just don't see that happening. I think when all is said and done, he's a mid-second-round choice.
Tony, one of my favorite sleepers in this class is Tarvarius Moore from Southern Miss. Wasn't invited to the combine, tore up his pro day. I went back and watched him, and I thought that the athletic skills transferred over to the field, just my personal opinion. Have you heard any good buzz on this kid? How high do you think he can go? Or am I completely off base and you're not hearing much about him and he's going to be an undrafted guy? What are your thoughts on what you've heard on Tarvarius Moore?
He's going to be a late-round guy. I have him as a sixth-rounder, which is probably where he's going to go. Like you said, he had a tremendous pro day when you watch him on film. That athleticism does basically translate onto the field. A little bit inefficient, doesn't take good angles, which has got to be brushed off, but I think he's going to be a late-round pick, potentially in nickel safety at the next level.
Fran, I like how you phrase that question. It's like, I love him. Is he a first-round pick?
Or am I nuts?
Or is he a street free agent? Which one does he fall into? So some big picture questions here, Tony, to wrap this up here. Any players, we've talked about Mo Hurst quite a bit here, but any other players whose medical might cause him to slide on draft night?
Well, you have to look at Josh Rosen. You got to look at Leighton Van Der Esch. I'm not hearing bad things about it, but that's a reason for those guys to slide. And then the off-the-field issues, you know, obviously you got to look at Antonio Callaway and Orton Key as well, but especially Antonio Callaway. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, at the top of his game, he's got top 45 potential, but he's such a train wreck off the field, I don't think he gets drafted.
Tony, my last question for you. Give us a surprise top 15 pick. We're not going to hold you to it. At least C-Mac won't. I might. We won't hold you to it. But give us a player that could shock us. Like for me, like De'Ron Payne, if he comes off the board, I think that'll shock a lot of people. It wouldn't shock me, but I think that would shock a lot of people. I think you agree. You and I kind of see De'Ron Payne the same way. I think he's a top 10 talent in the draft. But is there another guy that, you know, maybe it would be a surprise top 15 pick that people would kind of raise their eyebrows at and be surprised to hear his name called?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say Marcus Davenport because he is getting top 15 talk right now. To me, that would be a surprise. And I agree with you about the, obviously, we were on the same page with De'Ron Payne. I think he should be a top 15 pick. Depends on how quickly the defensive linemen come off the board. It could be one of the running backs. It could be if a team is just so fine with Darius Geis' off-the-field issues, a team in the top 15 could draft him, or what could happen is, or top half, or what could happen is a team who lost out on the quarterback could maybe trade back for a team that wants to move up to ensure they get a guy like Darius Guy. So if I had to roll the dice and just pull a name out of thin air, I'm going to say it would be Darius Guy for a team in the top 15 or a team that wants to trade up and get him.
Oh, wow, wow. Tony, any final thoughts before the draft finally comes on Thursday night?
I'll be glad when it's over, and then I can start looking forward to 2019. Final thoughts. I mean, I think the quarterbacks are overrated, and the quarterbacks are going to be overdrafted. You know, in the past, people, before everybody wanted the franchise quarterback, they talked about the impact defensive player. We got one in Bradley Chubb. They talked about the franchise running back. We got one in Saquon Barkley. Yet the conversation is constantly around the quarterback. They all have great upside. They all have a lot of downside risk. I mean, Sam Darnold is not a definite. He's got questionable reads. He's got poor fundamentals. His ball security is atrocious. Allen's got all the physical skills, but his accuracy is an issue. Now, he seems to have improved his accuracy in some of his technique, but he's late, which is dangerous at the next level. Josh Rosen, on the field and on film, hands down the best quarterback in this draft. But you got to worry about the off-the-field medicals. His personality doesn't rub people the right way. And then there's Baker Mayfield. You know, is Baker Mayfield going to be a good next-level quarterback, or is he going to be Johnny Manziel, where his electrifying play on Saturday just doesn't transition well to the next level? So my final thoughts are, you know, everyone's concentrating on the quarterback when they shouldn't. And remember, when the draft is over, all it is names on paper. You've got to transition these guys into next-level production, which the Philadelphia Eagles did so well last year. It doesn't matter if you have the greatest draft on paper. If you cannot transition to football production, it doesn't mean a thing. And that's why the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year.
Preach, brother Tony. Preach to us all. Tony Pauline, draftanalyst.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Tony Pauline. You'll get some Led Zeppelin references worked into the draft insights. But when it comes to being the draft insider, no one is better than Tony Pauline. That's why we have him here every year on the Journey to the Draft podcast. Tony? Appreciate it, brother.
My pleasure.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
Phenomenal stuff from Tony. You know, you have to take a deep breath almost after all the information that we just received from there.
A lot.
So much to get through. You know, I got to do a better job, hopefully, of taking notes and being able to tweet some of this information out. So we can tease it online and on social media leading up to Thursday. So now pick six bold predictions for, I guess, some of these involve Thursday. I think all of them involve
Thursday night
in one way or another.
Yeah, some way.
So Fran started us off here by saying that Denver takes a quarterback. That actually, in the rundown, he just says Denver takes a quarterback, but you might as well elaborate since you kind of ruined it.
Not only did I ruin one, but I think I ruined two.
You know,
looking back at this, all right, so I'm just going to just throw both in there. So one of my things was the Giants will not pick at number two. I just, in no feasible way do I think that a team could say, you know what, with the market being what it is for these quarterbacks, and maybe we're just crazy and there's not this market for the quarterbacks, but you have to think that there's a crazy trade market right now for these quarterbacks, and that any team looking to move up or down, there's going to be large amounts of picks being involved. I find it hard to believe that a team would pass that up to draft. And look, these guys are great players. Saquon Barkley, Quentin Nelson, Bradley Chubb, you throw him into the mix as well. Great players. But to say I would rather have, you know, just that player as opposed to the chance to still get that player along with five extra top 60 picks, like, that's silly. So I would just be shocked if the New York Giants stayed at two and didn't take a quarterback. So it seems like they say they love Eli Manning and they want him to be the guy. We'll see if that's lip service or not. There's all kinds of reports out there about them liking Sam Darnold and that he would be their guy, that if he fell, that would be the reason why they would stay. But if Cleveland does decide to go with Darnold, which, as we've talked about, it's still open, it's still possible, if they decide to take Darnold in one, we'll see what the Giants decide to do. I just don't feel like it's going to happen. And if they do trade out, yeah, we've heard about Buffalo and, you know, Arizona, New England. To me, like, Denver and Mayfield was like a match made in heaven like a few weeks ago before the Jets traded up. And once the Jets traded up and you start to hear, oh, it's going to be for Mayfield, now it's a matter of like, all right, that's where you – if you want to get Baker Mayfield, you got to get ahead of three.
Yep.
A team that's well-equipped to do that is the Denver Broncos. So that's, I think that makes some sense.
It's funny because you're working on your final mock draft for PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
As we speak, yep.
I did one a few weeks ago, and there was part of me that wanted to put Mayfield to the Broncos at number five because I think the Mayfield Jets thing wasn't as concrete as it was at the time. I think I put Rosen for the Jets at number three. But I kept thinking, I'm like, they coached him at the Senior Bowl. Baker's got the moxie that you could see John Elway liking. They've got Case Keem in play, so it doesn't have to be an immediate starter. You know, it's almost like it would be a good time where if you're kind of thinking about life after Case Keem, kind of projecting to the future a little bit. But at the end of the day, I kind of decided to reload and try to win, give Case Keem the best chance to win now to maximize that. You know, I guess it's still, they still have a Super Bowl window, even though they missed out on the playoffs last season. So very, very likely. And I guess that's the problem with the Jets declaring so early that we love Baker Mayfield.
It gives everyone the mark.
Now it's like, all right, just got to leapfrog to them. And most likely, you just have to get to that two hole where the Giants are. Just, it's amazing because it's like the 1 year the Giants stink is a year that they can end up with a supremely talented running back, which has been an Achilles heel for them for many years. And on top of that, end up with draft capital to help them for years to come.
That's the thing is, like, even if you are Dave Gettleman and you are perfectly within your right to not like Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen or Sam Darnold, you may not like any of them. That's a complete, but you could still get picks to help you later for when you do want that quarterback.
Yes.
Whoever that guy is in 2 years or 1 year or 3 years, like, to me, it would just be too much to pass up on.
All right, so you've knocked off two of yours already.
Yeah, so you got to go.
Giants are not picking number two. Denver takes a quarterback. My first one, and this is one that it's not been really rumored or reported, and it's really me just looking at the team, the need in the near future, and the coach that's working with the prospect, and that's Lamar Jackson to the Miami Dolphins. You know, I think Peter King in his mock draft for MMQB said that he believes the Dolphins are going to stick with Tannehill. And to me, I don't know if Tannehill is going to be that guy that's going to get you over the hump. I look at Adam Gase as a creative quarterback who can construct a scheme to maximize Lamar Jackson's skill set. You know, they're sitting there at number 11. That's probably, you know, the right position you're going to want to be at. I know that a lot of mock drafts have Vita Vea going to them at number 11 to replace Ndamukong Suh. You know, to me, there's questions about, is Vea going to be a three-down player in the NFL?
Viable question, too.
To me, it just because if it weren't Adam Gase, I probably wouldn't be as, you know, pushing this pick as much. But now all these rumblings about the New England Patriots bringing Jackson for the private workout, them having the draft capital to move up, maybe do the Dolphins try to stay ahead of the curve and cut off the Patriots at finding that successor for Tom Brady?
I think when it's all said and done, I think Lamar Jackson is definitely going to be a first-round pick. And I don't know that I definitely would have said that 2 weeks ago, a month ago, but there's just been so much buzz about him, whether it's, you know, as high as 11 or as low as the Pittsburgh Steelers at 30 or wherever, you know, 29, 30, wherever the Pittsburgh. Like, I feel like he's going to be a first-round pick, which hurts the Eagles because we were kind of hoping that he'd be there at 32 and the Eagles could kind of dangle him as the bait for the trade down.
Correct.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. There's obviously plenty of time. I don't think there's all the buzz about Mason Rudolph. I don't think that Mason Rudolph's going to be a first rounder.
So my second one involves the edge rusher class. And Bradley Chubb expect to go top five, probably to the Browns at number four. Probably the second player after the quarterback for Cleveland.
Feel good
one
about
and
that.
Four. To me, Harold Landry, and you look at guys like Vic Beasley and Leonard Floyd, who have gone high in recent drafts, to me, I think Harold Landry is going to be the second edge rusher off the board. My bold prediction, I guess it would be really bold if I were to say a top 10. I don't know if he's going to be a top 10 pick per se, but he's not someone who's being mocked, you know, in that mid-first round area. I think with that position, he's going to end up going there. Somewhere in that, and I definitely ahead of Marcus Davenport. My bold prediction is he'll go before Marcus Davenport.
I agree.
just because I think there are so many questions, more questions, I should say, about Marcus Davenport and what he's going to be in the NFL. You know, there might be more of a physical upside, similar to Tremaine Edmonds, where it's kind of like you look and you're like, wow, the ball of clay, you know, if you can mold it into a premier prospect, maybe the upside is greater than Harold Landry. But to me, you can tell what Landry's going to be, plug and play from day one. And I think it was Josh Norris on that phenomenal podcast that you were a part of, that War Room podcast, with all the draft experts getting together debating the top 10 players in the draft class, where I believe Josh Norris said that you look at Harold Landry and it's like Derek Barnett. You can project him into a role in day one in the NFL and figure out a place that he'll be successful while he learns the other tricks of the trade, improving his run defense, improving on counter moves and things of that nature.
I think the only reason why you wouldn't view Harold Landry as being a better player than Marcus Davenport is size. And we know that there are teams out there that value size at that position. You look at the Dallas Cowboys, I think the staff that's currently in Buffalo, there are a few teams out there that value size off the edge. And in that respect, then maybe, yeah, they may not look at Landry. But to me, like, Landry's a top 15 player in the draft. In that podcast you alluded to, we named him as a top 10 player in the draft.
Yeah.
I think that he's got all the ability. I think the comparisons to Derek Barnett, you can definitely make that comparison in terms of strengths and weaknesses. I'm a big fan of his. I agree. I think he will be the second one off the board. And I don't think it's crazy to think he could go top 10 either.
As you look at in the top 10, it's like I thought about Tampa Bay. And everyone's like, well, they got Vinnie Curry and Jason Pierre-Paul. Well, you look at the Eagles, you need – if you're going to compete and try to get after these quarterbacks, and the Bucs are in the NFC South where you still have Drew Brees in there, you got Matt Ryan, you know, you need to be able to come. You got Cam Newton. You got to be able to have the pass rushers and the depth there to be able to keep coming at the quarterback in waves. So I'll take the last one. My last one here is that an established NFL player will be involved in a trade on Thursday night.
Ooh.
In the first round.
What do you got? Give us something.
So, I know the Earl Thomas, the Dallas one's been mentioned in there. It's my sense is that teams are more willing to trade players than ever before and accept them vice versa. And for teams that maybe don't have the draft capital to move up or move back, something in your pocket could be, look, we've got a player to dangle involved here. So don't just look at draft picks and everyone wants to say, well, this team can offer its extra second and maybe a fourth round selection to move up. Don't rule out the player could be involved in the mix as well.
So do you like the idea of using the player to move up on Thursday night, or do you think it's a straight up player for pick scenario?
Ooh, I would envision it as part of a package probably when it's all said and done.
It's going to be interesting.
So I could easily see that. You know, I feel like we've seen more trades. I don't have the exact numbers, but we've seen more trades this offseason than ever before. That it's going to continue. And there's always a number of trades on draft night, but I wouldn't be shocked. My bold prediction is that there will be an NFL player involved in one of these trades.
I like that. That's a good bold prediction. My last one, I'm going to go with Maurice Hurst, who we said a couple weeks ago on the show, we named him as a player that will definitely not be there for the Eagles at 32. I am backtracking off that statement with this pick six. I think when you read the media tea leaves, right, you look at Mike Mayock's top five players at each position, Maurice Hurst not in the top
Shocking.
Five. Out of Peter King's mock draft, out of Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, I believe he was out of Albert Breer's mock draft. A lot of like the big name people that have followed this stuff very, very closely or are very well tied in have Maurice Hurst out of the first round. So that, you know, whether it's because of the on-field, you know, the worry about him against the run and things like that, or if it's the medical issue that popped up with the combine, I don't know. But you look at you're reading the media tea leaves, it feels like a player who, again, going back to that podcast, we on that podcast said he was a top 10 player in the draft, could fall potentially out of the first round.
It's amazing. It's for especially the value of the position. This isn't like Darius Geis, where you could say, well, it's a running back. You know,
he could be Geno Atkins. I mean, he could be.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he could be an extremely disruptive interior player.
With the value of that position, you know, with the quick game allowing teams, you know, I think of Eli Manning comes to mind immediately to take some of the heat away from the edge rushers. That interior disruption is so important. And for someone who has shown that he can do it and projects to the next level that he can do it, especially, you know, look at the Eagles at 32. It's like he'd be a great fit to me.
Outstanding fit.
So you have to wonder that heart condition that popped up at the combine. No one's saying that's what it is, but you have to wonder if he's not in these mock drafts and there's smart people like yourself and others in the draft Twitter community who think that Mo Hurst is a top 10 prospect to not go in the first round. And that's one of the things that we always learn after draft is like, all right, who are the guys that we didn't know the full juice about, the entire truth about beforehand.
To me, the Mayock thing is the one that's the most, like, for him to not be in the top five defensive tackles, like, that's startling.
So, pick six, six bold predictions. Whether or not they actually come to fruition, we'll wait and see. But now we're going to get to your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
Our draft mailbag is up and running, and it's great because you get these, you know, a wide array of different topics here. You have some Eagles-focused questions. You get some NFL-related ones. But, again, Apple Podcasts, the best way to get the questions sent to us and to have them answered here on the podcast. And Matt ESQ, I'm going to call him the Esquire, okay? Every time I see the ESQ, I want
to... The Esquire.
The Esquire. So he gets a nickname because he's asked enough questions here on the podcast, submitting through Apple Podcasts. First, he has his own bold prediction.
Way ahead of us on the pick six.
There we go. So this is number seven. Mason Rudolph is the best quarterback in the draft, and the Patriots are going to be gunning for him.
That is a bold prediction. That is hashtag be bold.
It's not even a question. Oh, I was waiting for that.
Nope. He wanted to make a bold prediction.
Mason Rudolph is the best quarterback, and I know you disagree with that, Fran.
I would say that he's not the best quarterback, but it doesn't mean he can't be.
That's true.
Patriots might be gunning for him. I could see the Patriots being in for him.
So he notes that before the Oakland game, that Nick Foles would lead the Eagles to a Super Bowl.
That was his prediction.
So I think
he's one for one.
Just say one for one.
Yeah,
just say one for one.
It's a walk-off homer.
Exactly. The next one, the question is, did he make some money off of it?
My guess is no.
Probably not.
I think he just made it to his son, from what I remember from the comment.
All right, our next question comes from lots of D's, an F, and a bunch of G's on Apple Podcasts.
I don't even know if that's the right amount. I just held my finger down. Yeah, I just summarized.
There's been a ton of talk that trading down should be a goal for the Eagles. There's also been talk about trading players on the roster for picks in the second day of the draft. Are there any potential packages of picks and players that you could see being a possibility that you would see reasonable, also given that they receive second or third round picks in return? So what players or talent could be the targets of these trades? And that's something we kind of touched on in the pick six.
Yeah. I don't know that, you know, who knows what the combinations are for the first part of the question. To me, the big part is the second part of the question. You know, are there the second and third round players? Who are players that would make sense? You know, like one player, because that's the thing is with the Eagles being in the situation where they're in, they're picking at 32 and then they don't have one in the fourth round. I've watched a lot of guys over the last few months where I'll watch him and think, yeah, he's in no man's land for us. Like he's too good for being a late fourth round pick, and he's probably just outside the range of being the 32nd overall pick. Guys like Darius Leonard from South Carolina State, I love that kid, but he's probably like right in that sweet spot. I could try and think of some other players. I mean, like maybe like an Anthony Miller, the wide receiver from Memphis, is probably one that you could probably throw in there. I'm trying to think from a position-by-position standpoint. Nick Chubb, from the running back from Georgia, certainly is probably in that discussion. Austin Corbett, the offensive lineman from Nevada, I think would be in there. Continuing down this list here.
So basically, I did the exercise.
You have a little list.
So what I'm trying to research right now, and I actually put this together for our producer, Melissa Kelly, who's behind the glass today, for our Eagles Draft Central, presented by Deaton Watson, show that's going to air Thursday night. Just take a look
at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, yes. Basically, what were some trades that have taken place in the late first round in recent years?
Okay.
Just to kind of get a sense of what the Eagles could potentially receive here. So, you know, we've gone through the last 10 picks at number 32, But here's an example. I'm trying to go through real quick. 2017, let's see, the Cleveland Browns. I'm trying to make sure I got – I'll start here. So Atlanta got the 26th overall pick, which I believe they used on Tack McKinley.
Yep.
And then Seattle got number 31 and a 2017 third round and a 2017 seventh round pick.
So they moved back five spots and picked up a 3 and a 7.
Yep. Cleveland, this is last year as well, Cleveland got number 29. Green Bay got a 2017 second-round pick and a 2017 fourth-round pick.
2 and a 4, okay.
Let's see. San Francisco, to get Reuben Foster, got 31. They gave Seattle 34. So
three spots, yep.
Three spots and a fourth-round pick.
That's the most recent one that you're looking at, yep.
You know that, and that's kind of what I'm just trying to go
through. Did you see the note from Peter King in the MMQB Monday morning? About how teams are valuing those mid-round picks more so than they normally do because of how deep this draft
is.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Another one, this is actually from last year as well. It was New Orleans, got number 32.
Oh, the Ryan Ramczyk.
Ryan Ramczyk, yep. And a 2017 third-round pick. This is where New England got Brandon Cooks and a 2017 fourth.
Okay.
So this is an example
of
a player being involved.
We talked about earlier.
That New England 2017 fourth-round pick was eventually traded to the Eagles and used to select Mac Collins.
Oh.
So
there you go. I like that.
A little connection there. But I just want to do the exercise of what can the Eagles get? Reasonably receive.
It seems like a four. If you're moving down three spots, if you're going from 32 to 34 or 35.
But is a four enough, though? Because the Eagles have fours. They've got five third-day picks.
Yep.
You know, Joe Douglas is like, Saturday, we're going to be making moves, and we're excited. There's a buzz in the building about Saturday because that's the day the scouts win.
Yeah, right. Although I do think, like, if that's what you can get, I still think you take it. You know, if the board falls the way that you want it to, and you've got a few players that are available, let's say it's you're picking at 32, you've got the ability to move to 35. There's four guys on the board you really like that are graded evenly. I think you take the four and you say, all right, we'll have our pick tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll get that extra fourth round pick. I think that would help you. Because it really comes down to a numbers thing. Like now we're getting another fourth round pick. That's another player that we feel good about. You're feeling good about a fourth round pick.
Yes.
They're able to add to your roster.
Package some of those
fourth
round picks to move up to the third.
If you wanted to, right.
I forget who wrote it. Was it Ben Volen who did a piece on how analytics are controlling the third day of the draft for some teams?
Interesting. How
so? And that basically they'll crunch whether it's Spark Score or a different formula that they use, and it's almost like not they take the scouting out of it, but they rely more on certain numbers to say, all right, on day three, if there's a certain trait that we're looking for that's exceptional in a player, let's use that to pick the guys instead of just saying maybe he's the best overall prospect. You know, you'll look for an elite trait instead. So
I love day three of the draft because, and this is why I actually do that episode of the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast every year with Greg Cosell during day three of the draft, because we talk about those kinds of things from like a philosophical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is when you look at day three, obviously everybody's got a bunch of picks and, you know, it's lesser known guys. And, you know, how do you approach it? Do you approach it from, let's just try and go for, you know, the lottery ticket type of players who's got one great trait that, you know, we're banking on they can succeed and turn into a starter? Or are you taking safe bets and saying, like, hey, we feel like this guy can come in and be, you know, our fourth corner and a quality special teamer, let's go for it, you know, something like that? I think that it's interesting to see how teams can differentiate in terms of that strategy.
All right, so went a little bit off tangent.
Yeah, there, a little bit.
I think there's some good things that just came to mind while going through the exercise there. Our good friend Eagles Troll on Twitter says, evaluating tackle and guard prospects, how do you figure who's more likely to shift inward and who can overcome certain measurables, for example, Connor Williams or Humboldt State's Alex Kappa?
So I think really it's a combination of a couple things. Number one, a guy's feet, a guy's arm length, and then a way that a guy uses his hands in pass protection. You know, so if a guy's got two of the three, then I think he can stick a tackle if needed.
Okay.
If you only have one of the three, I think you're going to struggle a little bit. So there are players that have, you know, that we all know, like that threshold for arm length, the tackle spot, around 33 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a guy's got 32.5-inch arms, but he's got great feet, and he's able to use his hands well enough that he knows that he can be patient with his punch. He's not going to get overextended and bend at the waist and now be at a point where a guy's able to get past him because he's off balance. Now you're at a point where, if this guy knows what he's doing, he understands his limitations, and he's not going to put himself in a position to get beat, now you can kind of work with that. And we've seen undersized tackles in the past work with that. But again, if you only have one of the three, if you've got – that's why, like, Orlando Brown, to me, I think Orlando Brown can play tackle in the NFL because I think he knows how to use his hands, and I think he's obviously got outstanding length. And his feet, I think, are good enough. Like, they're not great. I'm not saying he's not a dancing bear. He's not Lane Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his feet are good enough, so I think he'll be okay. It'll be interesting, though, because there's a lot of guys in this class that I think kind of fit that of what Eagles Troll's talking about. He mentioned Connor Williams. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Alex Kappa. There are a bunch of players in this class. That's why most analysts will say this isn't a good tackle group, because most of the people that will say, oh, yeah, this guy could be a tackle, probably are viewed as better guards moving forward than necessarily
it's
pure
tackles. Prototype.
They're not the prototype, exactly.
That you're looking for in the past. So where do you rank size into that conversation?
Like height?
Yes.
Probably lower.
Height and weight.
A little bit lower. I mean, to me, like, weight, you need to be like 305 plus. That's not like a hard threshold for me. It's just how I view it.
Yeah.
But you want to be – to me, like, you've got to be able to hold up against a bull rush coming from distance. Like, when someone's – if Brandon Graham's lined up as a wide nine technique and he's going to go speed to power, like, do you have the core strength to be able to drop your anchor on three steps and hold up against a bull rusher? Like, that's important. And we've seen guys in the past, young guys, come into the league and struggle with that. I know watching Garrett Bowles last year, that was an issue for him early on in his career. We'll see. He's got a full NFL – a full year in the offseason to kind of stay in that NFL weight room. We'll see if he gets better. But that stuck with me, watching him struggle early in his career.
Last question regarding that. Where do you look at in terms of shifting a guy from left side to right side? Or are you more of the line now to say, if a guy was the right tackle in college because it's important enough to win on that side, that you just keep him there and not say, oh, we're just going to move him from right to left?
I think that that's a that's more of a comfort thing in terms of the player. Like, if a player is comfortable enough to make that switch, that's what Jeff Statland has talked about that with Lane Johnson. When Lane Johnson came out of Oklahoma, there were things that Lane had to work on from a technique standpoint, and he had to polish those up on the right side before he could even think about saying, let's move him to left. So when he had him at right the first couple of years, he wanted to make sure, like, all right, let's bring him along. Let's get his footwork and his landmarks set in terms of pass protection, how he's using his hands. Let's get all that done from the right side. Because now when you go over to the left, everything's different. You're using everything. Evan Mathis has talked about that with us in the past, that everything is just flipped for you. It's like trying to write an essay with your left hand if you're right-handed your entire life. So to me, it's more – that's why, like, when you see guys that have done both, I think that gives a little bit of a boost. Like, Mike McGlinchey's done both. Colton Miller's done both in terms of playing left and right side. I think that kind of helps the transition a little bit if you have a guy who has done both in the past.
All right, couple questions I want to get through real quick here. Open Veins UK, who did the list of players who would definitely be gone with you a couple weeks ago on the podcast. Assuming Buffalo feels pressure to move up, having traded away so much to get to number 12, what do you think that the Giants can do to fleece them to get to number 2? And he, of course, says hopes that the Giants stay and take a running back, but afraid that they're going to end up with next year's first, a first this year, 2 seconds, and a third. And I think that's kind of what we hit on.
The skeptic in me believes that that's what Dave Gettleman is holding out for, and that's why the Jets traded up weeks ago to number 3, because the Giants were saying, yeah, we want your firstborn child, and they weren't willing to give up their firstborn child. So I really think that the Giants are holding out for a big offer. That's just my guess, the skeptic in me.
All right, Taylor at TBolt10 on Twitter says he wants a Fran guy who fits the Eagles. It would be a day 3 selection, a late round selection.
I'll let you take the second part of asking the question. Give me like 3 positions that would make sense, and I'll give you a couple names.
All right, let's go wide receiver.
Wide receiver, 3 names that make sense. Dante Pettis.
Okay.
A guy I like, a slot receiver from Washington. He is a slot receiver only, but I do like his ability. Yards after catch, punt returner, really good route runner, one of the better route runners in this class. Really like Dante Pettis. Deshaun Hamilton, I'll throw into that group. I tend to think he's more of a day two guy, but receivers, you never know, especially since a lot of people kind of pigeonhole him as a slot guy only, and that may hurt him a little bit. And then let's go Cedric Wilson.
Okay.
Cedric Wilson, Boise State, a guy who can be a vertical threat. He's a solid route runner, and he's a good deep ball guy.
All right, I'll go tight end.
Tight end. Love Ryan Izzo from Florida State. Junior, one of the best blockers at the position in the class, probably the best blocker that I watched in the class. I think he's going to be a day three guy because he's an intermediate receiver. He's not a guy that's going to stretch the seam. Tyler Conklin from Central Michigan is a player who really intrigues me because he's a little bit undersized, but I think he's got really good versatility. He gives effort as a blocker. He's athletic. He's got a basketball background. I like his versatility. I think he'd be used in ways similar to Trey Burton. And then last one, I'm going to go with Chris Herndon from Miami because, you know, Chris Herndon, to me, I think he would be in that top 50, top 60 discussion had he not gotten hurt. And the offense there this year, I think there were some newcomers on offense for Miami. You know, I think if they had everybody kind of come back from the previous year, they would have been even better this year, obviously, namely the quarterback. But you look at Chris Herndon, I mean, he's athletic. He gives effort as a blocker. He's probably the most athletic tight end in this class in terms of just pure deep speed down the field. He's an explosive athlete. I'm a fan of Chris
Herndon.
More
than Gesicki.
I mean, Gesicki's like that long strider. And I still think, like, when you watch Gesicki, he's a little bit gawky.
Okay.
Herndon is smooth, and he's explosive. I mean, they're comparable, but Herndon
just from the athleticism,
Herndon is really intriguing. Yeah.
I'll go linebacker.
I'll say I don't think Darius Leonard's going to be there day three. So I'm going to go with Joel E.A. Buniwe from Western Kentucky. He's a player I've been talking about since the combine, right before the combine. I'm a big fan of the way that he plays. Tigre Scales from Indiana, really productive player. He's tough. He's just a little bit undersized. For the third one, I'll go with Carson Wentz's former teammate and former co-captain at North Dakota State, Nick DeLuca. Injury is a little bit of a concern with him, but big physical instinctive. He's just not the greatest athlete. That's why he'll be a day three guy.
All right. And you're late entry into the draft mailbag.
Yes, we have one extra. Just came in hot off the presses from Raheem Jackson. If Darius Geis, Leighton Vander Esch, and Mike McGlinchey are there at 32. Oh,
it's McGlinchey, one. It's who?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd go McGlinchey, Vander Esch, Geis.
I think I would agree with that. McGlinchey, just positional value, talent, just not, you know, there's mocks with him now in the top 10. It's, if he were there, you know, you've secured your long-term answer at the tackle position. Vander Esch would be injecting some youth and athleticism to the linebacker position. Still, even though linebacker isn't a pressing need for the Eagles for 2018, there are a lot of questions, I think, about 2019 and beyond. And then Darius Geis, I would love to have him at 32, but if we're just talking these three, it's like, again, positional value comes into play. You love the smash mouth ability that Darius Geis would bring to the offense, but I think there are enough running backs that you don't have to say, I got to have this guy at 32.
Agreed.
So that's going to do it. So we're going to come back on Wednesday with our Reporter Mock Draft podcast. I'm sure there'll be a few curveballs thrown into the mix.
Beautiful.
And then Thursday, our draft coverage kicks off at 7 p.m. Eagles Draft Central, presented by Deaton Watson. 1 hour pre-draft show with myself and Dave Spadaro. And then Fran and I will be on every time the Eagles make a pick, or I'll assume probably if...
We'll have a few things in between as well. A
few things in between.
We'll go live,
Facebook Live, that we will be having broadcast as well during the draft. But even if the Eagles move out of 32 on Thursday night.
Oh, yeah.
I think we got to come on regardless to discuss.
Say something. So, a couple words here and there.
Yeah. You'll have the press conferences and the whole nine.
We'll dabble.
You know, it'll be a party here.
Yeah.
So make sure you join us all draft weekend. So, again, special shout out to Melly Mel for handling things behind the glass. Thank you all to our very loyal listeners, and we appreciate the comments, the questions, the ratings, whatever you leave, wherever you leave them, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. Thank you so much. And for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. You've been listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast. We'll be back on Wednesday.